You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
The movie Soylent Green, starring Charlton Heston, was set in the year 2022. And for those that have seen it, you remember the iconic line at the end of the movie where Charlton Heston emotes, as he always does in all of his movies, "Tell them all! Tell them Soylent Green is people!" I welcome Thomas Costello and Sam Fahmy. Bart Logan will be here with us later. I'm Brian Phillips from CD92.9. Thank you so much for checking out the first 2022 edition of the Massive Report podcast, brought to you by Saucy Brew Works. And next week, God willing, we will be seated next to each other at Saucy Brew Works. Please like and subscribe. We would appreciate that very much. Wherever you get your podcast, please leave us nothing but positive feedback, because we are very sensitive and it's easy to crush our very souls. So Soylent Green, where Charlton Heston says, "Tell them all," going into any new MLS season, I just feel like I'm starting over and I don't know anything. And it seems like this sport and this league more than others, you just feel lost and you're groping in the dark. So Thomas, I'll ask you first, what should we tell everyone about the 2022 Columbus Crew?
Well, thanks for having me. I feel like the 2022 Crew is going to justify one of two things: that this team is the 2020 Crew, or this team is the 2021 Crew. That's what I'm feeling coming into the season, because there were a lot of injuries last year. There were a lot of issues that they had to overcome, and I completely subscribe to that. I don't think it was a Porter issue or poor people coming in and all that. I think 2022 is going to be closer to 2020, but if things go south, we kind of have seen where that has gone.
It's not a long fall from the top to the middle in MLS. You know what I mean? Yeah. You know, a few breaks here and there, and you're 10th or you're 4th. Mm-hmm. And hopefully better than all that. Sam, what should we tell them all about the 2022 Columbus Crew?
They're going to be wearing yellow.
Right. Well, we'll get to that at the end. I'm sure someone has something
it's
to
gold.
Complain about.
They're wearing gold.
As far as the jerseys, as the jerseys go.
Yeah, the 2020 Crew is going to have some new faces that I think will get more time than people expect them to. Even younger faces that might get more time. But I think Thomas kind of nailed it on the head. That's the same conversation I was having with somebody earlier, is that this team, if they stay healthy and with no international breaks and all that stuff, could be closer, not the same, but could be closer to 2020, which is basically middle of the playoff pack, than 2021. And that's, I think that's very viable. But I don't think this team is built to dominate the East in any way or form.
Well, if you get hot at the right time though, we have seen over the years what can happen. So we'll see. But it's so early. It's what, February 21st? The first game is on Saturday, the 26th at 3:30 at home against Vancouver. And it is a long, long journey from beginning to end. And that journey started with the Carolina Challenge, won by Miami through some sort of fluke. I know, Thomas, and I really appreciate you being here and appreciate you and your work with MassReport.com. I enjoyed your coverage. And you, like me, watched a good portion of it. Mm-hmm. And first of all, before we get into what we liked and we didn't like, I just like seeing Artur and Aiden Morris out on the field. What do we know? It looks like they're not 100% in terms of their fitness, but these two guys are so important to what we want to do this year. What's the feel going into the Vancouver game, coming out of those three matches? What's the feel for their fitness?
Looking at the matches and just hearing Porter talking to him in press conferences, Morris and Artur are both not 90-minute fit. Now, Morris played a good amount of minutes in that second game. Him and Zawatsky played. He came in the first match, but he played, I think it was in the 60 plus minutes in the second match against Charlotte there. I listening to Porter and watching on Friday was the game where this is the practice game for Vancouver. Let's get our starters on the field. Our tour, everything Caleb's saying and seeing it on the field Friday, our tours, if he's healthy, he's starting. And even if he's not 100% healthy, he's going to be starting. And I think you're going to see him playing on Saturday right next to Darlington, like we have been used to for the last couple of seasons on and off, especially last year. And I think Morris is going to be that next person up. I think when our tour comes out in the second half on Saturday, it's Aiden Morris coming in and filling in that slot, but neither of them are close to, they're on their way to 100%. I don't think they're near 90 minutes right now, but once they do hit that, once they do get healthy, it's really going to allow Porter, I think, to play around a little bit with what the team can do.
Let's talk about some of the new faces. Of course, as we saw in the NFL with Mr. Chase down there in Cincinnati, the right rookie in the right place at the right time can provide a great deal of excitement. But my experience with sports overall is that, let's not get too excited about preseason and a rookie. Let's give the guy a chance to grow. But Zawadzki is creating, as you wrote, a lot of excitement. The Georgetown product, the homegrown, just kind of to, for those that don't follow it at that level, where did he come up before he was taken into the Crew Academy? Mm-hmm. What do we know about him?
Well, in terms of before he came to the Crew Academy, that's the youth systems and the way the Crew attracts players and the way the Crew tries out kids. I'm not sure his kind of youth route prior to the Academy, but he came up in the Academy with your Aiden Morris's, with your Isaiah Parentes, other players that we have on the field. And I know rookies in every sport are kind of exciting to me. In MLS, rookies are so hit or miss. It's to me, it's just,
most don't make an impact,
especially from the draft. I think that Zawadzki coming into the team now with Aiden Morris, who he knows from the Academy, coming in with Will Sands, who he played with in college, I think he's comfortable, and people saw that on the field. He's not an offensive minded midfielder. He's kind of in that role as Artur. He's the eight next to Nagby, and he takes up a lot of space. Porter said this himself. He covers a lot of ground. He's young for the way that the Crew want to play. He can cover a ton of the field. I don't think he's going to be somebody who's going to start unless injuries happen, God forbid, unless other things put it in that position. But I think he's going to be somebody with a higher ceiling than I would say a Sebastian Berhalter. I think he's a guy that Porter likes, but I think he's going to slowly bring him into the game.
So I liked against Miami that he drew some defensive responsibility against Gonzalo Higuain and seemed to stand up to that challenge pretty well. Higuain doesn't get around quite like he used to, but he's still, you watch him, you go, this guy is, galaxy brained about how he watches the game unfurl in front of him and always seems to be where he ought to be. So that's a guy for a rookie. That's a big responsibility because he's thinking at a different level than you are. And I felt like he did a nice job.
Yeah, I think it's the confidence. He even shared with us last week in the press conference a couple weeks ago, he was in his own right trying to make up the difference between college and pro. So he wants to get more physical. He wants to push himself. And I think that was the first match of the Carolina Challenge Cup. Now he's played in other preseason, the two against Granada and the earlier match against Inter Miami that we weren't able to see, but he went into the challenges with confidence. He wasn't somebody who was second guessing anything he did. He knew what he was doing and he did it. And I think that's a sign of somebody who is going to see the field in 2022. Yeah.
And Sam, that reminds me of the aforementioned Academy mate of his, Aiden Morris. As soon as he was called into duty in that championship run, and certainly in the final, that kid wasn't scared of anybody or anything. And if we can get that sort of approach from from Sean as well. I mean, that's just gravy at this point.
Right. And you're kind of preparing for that future. I was thinking the same thing as I'm watching Aiden Morris play. I think it was against Charleston. It might have been like the tail. I think I watched the tail end of the other game. Is that he was running kind of with a little bit of a reckless abandon. I felt a little uncomfortable because it was like, dude, you're just coming off a year long injury recovery. Please don't hurt yourself. We can definitely use you. And honestly, I'm surprised that Artur got to play as much as he did and look as good as he did, because the talk in most of the offseason has been Artur is suffering setback. He might not be able to make it. So getting that back and then having, I'm going to totally butcher his name. Thomas, say it again.
Zawadzki.
Thank you. Having Zawadzki come in, and you're like, who, like, I kept hearing the name. I'm like, who is this kid and where did he come from? Mm-hmm. So that's good. And I think that's kind of where I'm looking at this. You might see some faces that you weren't expecting playing more minutes than you were expecting. Mm-hmm. Because you're right now, I think you're still the oldest. Well, maybe you're not the oldest average age team in the league anymore, but you're pretty darn close. You're up there. You're in the top half. Yeah. So starting to get that homegrown blood and those draft picks that may or may not work out, or those guys in, that's, you're going to see a lot of that.
And Porter's not going to do that. Oh, go ahead. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead. Finish.
I was going to say Porter, they're not getting young for the sake of getting young. They're not getting young just because it's the good thing to do to get younger. Right? He's even said, like, we still have goals to compete. We're not trying to get younger to lower an average. That's part of it. You naturally have to do that. But they're looking for short-term and long-term gains at the same time while also staying competitive, which, like you mentioned earlier, Brian, this league is – it's insane sometimes the parity that they go for, and they get it. It's interesting every year. You have different teams competing every year, but I think the Crew will see now. This is Porter's fourth season now with the club, and the ownership's really third season, all firing all cylinders. I am interested to see where it ends at the end of the season.
So in our coverage, Caleb Porter has already sort of thrown a wet blanket on scoring expectations for this club. And we'll see how that turns out, but I get what he's saying. And I think certainly this club is going to put in a re-emphasis, because I think and I'm guilty of this too. You're a fan, you want to see goals, but then you start thinking about and tearing apart last season. You go, you know what? Our defending at times was uncharacteristically terrible. Mm-hmm. And he's made this a goal to sort of rebuild the attitude back there, to make sure that the right guys are back there. And part of that effort, and by the way, I felt like defensively we looked fine in those three games down in Carolina. But Pedro is it would seem Thomas is going to be a fixture at left back. Mm-hmm. It is not going to be jumping around so much if everything goes the way that Caleb Porter hopes it will. And every time I see him play back there, I feel more comfortable with him being there.
Yeah. We've been so used to Valenzuela and awful over the last few seasons, even when Mountain Valenzuela's mismatches due to injury, it's going to be a different look, but you can see the confidence and granted for Marrera too on the right side. Caleb, I mean, the first week he came into camp, Caleb's like, okay, you're starting in the Campiones Cup. Like right away, it's like, no, you're the best fullback on the team. You're up there. And Pedro, he just talking to him a few weeks back, he's the guy who's like, I'll play any position. Put me anywhere and I'll do it. And he's fine with playing winger. He's fine with playing back. When the Crew won the title, it was defense though. It was defense that got them there. And you talk about him tempering the offensive hopes a little bit. That was right after Etienne told us that they could score 3 to 4 goals if everyone's firing like they should. So I think that might be Porter kind of, I think he might be trying to calm folks down and slow down the hype train a little bit. But defensively, if you can keep Mensa or Dejanik and Williams, if you can keep consistent center backs back there and they're playing together and you don't have injuries, and we had midfielders playing center back last year, you could see them getting back into a playoff position. I mean, they weren't far off with all the issues they had last year either.
Jedinek, Milos, the Australian national, who comes from Red Star Belgrade, which, you know, for that particular league, they're always in European competitions. That's the best team in that league more often than not. So he was at a high level of competition. It doesn't look like, I mean, he's going to have to win his playing time from Josh Williams. When you break down, if Mensa's healthy, Mensa's going to be out there, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And yeah, how do you see him, and how do you see them all fitting together?
I think Dejanik is the starter that you're going to see throughout most of the season, if I had to guess. I think that you saw the crew try to do this in 2020, bringing in a slightly older Wormgoer, but you brought him in. He started the first match, out the second match with a little bit of an injury, injures himself in the MLS's back tournament. I think Milos coming in it's going to be Mensa and Milos at a certain point, and maybe even sooner rather than later, because Williams, he pulled up in that last Challenge Cup match with what looked like could have been a groin injury. There's not that we haven't heard anything official yet, but it's preseason, so a precaution, they're going to take him off. But I think Williams in 2020 was more of a, I'm a depth, I'm a leader, and I'm on the field, and I'll come in if we need to be on there. But he stepped up whenever the crew needed him. I think Milos, 27-year-old guy, like you said, he's played in Europe. I know we all have a mysticism up Europe, but he actually starts and wins. It's not just, you know, he didn't have a coffee in Europe. He's been playing there for years. He's a professional. I think he's going to step in, and I think he'll impress a lot of folks. So I put Mensa and Milos in there for the long term, I would say, this season.
Bart Logan's ears must have been burning, because as soon as we started talking about Josh Williams, he pops crazy on the screen. Good to see you, Bart. I know you and I share a great love of Josh Williams, but Thomas giving us a bit of a dose of reality that at his age, Josh's playing time is going to tick down a few notches, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. He's an older player now. And certainly has an important role on this team. I'm curious how much you watched the Carolina Challenge, just so I know kind of where you're coming from here.
I didn't get to watch too many of the games, so I can't, you know, weigh in too much on the individual performances, but I will say, you know, with regard to the center back position, I mean, that's why they bring in Milos Jegnak. I think that, you know, frankly, if things had gone, I think, probably a bit more according to plan, Buba Keita would have really seized that center back position last year. And I think, you know, the fact that he didn't is why he's now a Colorado Rapids player. Because Josh Williams has kind of been the guy, I think, for, you know, for the better part of the last three seasons, that they've kind of been saying, hey, and, you know, we're probably envisioning him more as a guy coming off the bench and being glue. And then, play, you know, by virtue of injuries or just stellar play on his part, and stick with it. He just continued to be the most reliable option, opposite of Jonathan Mensa. So while I think, you know, obviously that's what you pay Milos for to bring him in, I think it'll remain to be seen whether I don't think we've seen the last of Josh Williams. I don't think he's gonna, you know, go quietly into the night, and you know, no matter what, I think he's just such a good person to have in that locker room, just as a professional for these young players and guys that are new to MLS and new to Columbus. When you talk about creating a club culture, I mean, that's a guy that just oozes it.
Absolutely. I wouldn't know how to go into a season without Josh Williams out there somewhere.
It would break me.
He's my crew comfort food. I just feel good having him there. Whether he's starting or not, it's just, I think he is an important guy to have around. Well, overall, I feel good about the defense. I hate to judge the attack on three preseason games that I watched 99% of, but I felt like the two MLS matches, Miami and certainly Charlotte, were pretty lackluster. And Thomas, I know that in the NFL, in a preseason game, they're going to be vanilla, as they say in the vernacular. We're not going to show them that much. We don't want to give tape to the clubs we're going to play this year. How much does that apply to the beautiful game here in preseason games and friendlies? How much do we attribute the lack of zing in the attack in those three games to just not wanting to show our hand, or is that even a thing?
Well, NFL-wise, the Browns were undefeated in the preseason in 2017, and then they lost every single regular season game of the year. I think that there are outstanding circumstances in every performance that made it look like, yeah, either they're worse than we think or maybe they're better than we think. You mentioned off-air, Brian, the last match, you were playing a USL side, but also you were playing your first team in a formation that they're probably more used to, because that first match against Miami, you played a little bit of a different set than you're used to. You played a little bit of a different formation, and even in, they only played it for half too. They played it for half, and then the second half they kind of went back to their usual, you know, two defensive holding midfielders. And
what were they doing in the first half for the uninitiated? Maybe they didn't watch it. What were they doing in the first half of the Miami game? And was this an experiment that they would like to try during regular play?
I think during regular season, you'll see it at some point. Like we mentioned earlier, if Morris and Artur can get healthy, I think you'll see it. But they started two center backs. They started Josh and Jonah back there. They had Moreira and Santos on the fullback. So that was normal in the back four. But then you had a three midfielder set where you had Nagby, Artur, and Zawatsky playing with each other. And then in between them and Miguel Berry up front, you had Yeboah and Lucas next to each other, where we didn't have a outright 10 as much as we had two attacking midfielders kind of floating around. So I don't think that's a formation we see right away. I think it's something Caleb wants to do. You'll probably see something like that maybe more away, where they want to play more defensive. You have some more midfielders back there to get them some minutes. I think that's why it looks so different. The biggest positive you see from the crew is when the fullbacks and the wingers are on the same page. You saw this against Charleston, where Moreira gets ahead of Yeboah and Santos can get, you know, ahead of Etienne, or Etienne gets in behind the defense. They weren't doing that in the first match. And also, this is one of the first times that Yeboah even played with any of his teammates, because he just got, you know, he just joined the team before this Carolina Challenge Cup. So I don't put a lot into it. The second half, I mean, you saw Zardes come in, you saw Etienne come in, and they scored, which was fine. The second match, people were so upset after that match. People were not happy, but you played, no offense, you played Justin Malou and Will Sands, two guys who have never played MLS as fullback. They didn't get far enough up ahead. Porter said after the match, he would have liked Sands to get further up. Malou was kind of he said this on the crew's official like website video with the communications folks. Malou is kind of a sit back, right back. He's not going to be too far forward. And that's not how the crew plays. You had so many young kids in that second match. I don't care.
Obviously, like a typical crew supporter, I overreact to everything. So
I wasn't calling you
that's
out.
But you're right. You're right. That's what we do. Our love is so it's so all encompassing that we just, everything is met with too much emotion. And I forgot that it was a preseason game, and I did like the way we looked against Charleston. You mentioned Yeboah. Give me a snapshot of his background coming into the team, and what can we expect from him in terms of playing time and contribution?
I think he's going to be starting. He's going to be starting for the crew in that winger role. I think with Santos moving back, it's his to lose. And I think you're going to have wingers on the other side, the eternal winger battle between Etienne and Diaz and Matan now, who's going to get that. And then when Molino comes back, I know later in the season, that gets thrown into the conversation again, like it did last season. But Yeboah, he's played over in Europe. He's played in some lower divisions over in Europe. And he's somebody that Mensah even talked about almost recruiting to the crew because he was a younger kid coming out of Ghana, and Jonathan Mensah knew him growing up and him as a young player. And he sold him on the training facility and the new stadium and all of these positives that, you know, the crew now have over the last couple seasons. And there are ways you can recruit people. I mean, I think every new person has brought up the training facility. Every new person's brought up the stadium. He's somebody that if you have a co-signed by Jonathan Mensah on the team, he's probably someone who's not, he's not bad. He comes from a very strong soccer nation. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's a young guy. He's just 24. And yeah. Lest we forget, he had no appearances with them, but he was in the fold with Manchester City from 14 to 18. That tells you something. I mean, to even get into that program is something else. And he's kind of floated around. He's been a loan player. But it looks to me like he has a few caps with the national team. And that's not a ragged program. That's, you know, they're one of the tops in their continent, regardless of the competition. So certainly, you know, they have a history of great players there as well. So that's exciting.
So I look forward I happen to work with a gentleman who is from Ghana who actually used to coach Harrison and Jonathan in Ghana when they were youth. And he talked a lot about Yayaboa and how, like, his talent and his speed. And we were actually just talking about it in the hallway today that, like, his expectation on him is really high because he is considered a talented player in Ghana's soccer circles. So I hope there were some flashes between him and Moreira of them overlapping on each other and just kind of trying to do some really neat things. I'm hoping that he does kind of get to gel with the rest of the team, which seems that that's just a little off right now. But if he's going to start, he's not going to have a ton of time. He's going to be thrown right in the fire and he's going to go for it. So no time to be timid. But I think, you know, Jonathan Mensah is considered a legend in Ghana. And when the legend is recruiting you to come play with him, you're not going to let him down.
And he did that in the third match. Like he was part of that Zella Rayan goal. Like Yeboah and that overlap you talked about. And I even wrote in the recap of the match, I thought Yeboah was, outside of scoring a goal, I thought he was the most exciting player to watch in the first 25, 30 minutes of the match. I mean, and also Milos, I mentioned this just because the World Cup is coming up and Ghana is still fighting to get into it. Milos, in an interview with MLS, said, I came over here also to help my chances of staying fit for the World Cup. I think Yeboah, how he plays, if he lives up to the potential, he's also probably trying to do the same thing. Now, Ghana has to qualify, and they have a tough road in AFCON, but
They don't even have a coach, and they take on Nigeria. So this is going to be pretty messy. All of the African qualifiers are going to be pretty messy. But this, you know, whether he does get pulled into the national team or not, this is going to be weird to see how international windows play with this season, because it's not going to be like last season, but it might come in a critical spots with teams playing friendlies in preparation for the World Cup. Yeah. So based on how Ghana bowed out of the African Cup of Nations, and like I said, they fired their coach, so it's going to be real tricky to see how this pans out.
Thomas, anybody else among the crop of new players, and their names have popped up here and there in our discussion, anybody else that we should know more about at this point, or are we just sort of watching and seeing how everything plays out? Anybody jump to mind with you?
Honestly, looking at the minutes that were played, I don't see any. I think Zawadzki has the biggest chance to get on there from the players that Yeboah and Dejanek. I think they're starters. Right. They're going to be up there in the 11 conversation. Outside of Zawadzki, I think you have a lot of players that could potentially, maybe down the road, you might bring a couple of them into crew too. I know they're still waiting to fill out their roster. They only have four players right now officially.
It's not enough.
Mathematically, they're gonna get butchered. But there are other players still training with them, and I think over you're going to see over the next few days, probably week or so, more players getting signed on. But yeah, I think some of the names that we drafted, we drafted a couple big center backs. I think they could potentially be on crew too, and maybe see what they have over a full season or two. But outside of that, I think you're going to see a lot of, well, Jahlil Anibaba, I should bring him up. He's a veteran. I was thinking new as in like younger, but as an MLS veteran, he had one mistake against Charleston where he was a little too far forward towards the end of the match where Milos came in and kind of, not excuse me, against Charlotte. But he made up for it by clearing out, what, three shots on the goal line at the end of the match.
Yeah. Like,
I think his veteran presence will be good. If we can, if we want to play three in the back, if Williams gets, if he is healthy, or Jahlil, you have two really good options there to play with Mensah and Milos.
Yeah, I mean, Jahlil is, at 33, a true journeyman in this league. Nashville, New England, Houston, Sporting, Sounders, Chicago Fire.
But he knows the last
decade plus. He knows the league, knows exactly how the game is played. And really, I mean, we're not going to have to ask a ton of him unless everything goes horribly wrong. He's just that good bench depth. Mm-hmm. I'm curious about one thing, though. That one of the things that surprised me the most in the offseason, and it really didn't raise much of a blip on the radar, but why Hurtado was brought back. Bart, you're shaking your head.
That was a head scratcher for me. I mean, he's a play. I'd even think, you know, I don't have the advanced stats in front of me, but I'd think he's a replacement level player at best. You need to have a warm body at the attacker, you know, recognizing that Jossie Zardes, I think, hits the 30-year milestone this year, if he didn't already.
He's 30
and then,
now.
You know, Miguel Barry obviously has been so impressive in, you know, a little limited time last year. But I think crew fans need to temper their expectations a little bit with Barry. You know, if he continues to score at that rate, I will be thrilled. But I think it's, you know, fair that there could be a little bit of regression. So you need somebody. I did thought that they would have literally just signed anyone else. but here we are, or that's, you know, maybe a player that you look at, and maybe it's one of those, you know, they look and see if there's someone that you signed a crew to, that really starts, you know, knocking on the door and forces their way up and forces, you know, Juan Hurtado out, or Eric Hurtado out. I think it'll ultimately be incumbent for, you know, unless they're looking at a long term in a big name signing at the striker position. I think it makes more sense to look for a young player who can, you know, put him out of a job.
You gotta be real careful with the assumptions about crew too, based on the rules of.
Yeah,
I'm going to say promotion and drop down, or whether, you know, it's kind of almost like with the boundaries of minor leagues and MLB or in hockey, where you can only have them down for so many games, and or you can only bring them up for on emergency basis and things like that. So, yeah, I thought that was weird too. I was hoping that they'd sign. Like, I just thought it was a weird signing, kind of like why we still have Luis Diaz, but that's just me.
Oh,
Luis Diaz is, you know, 22, 23 years old versus Hurtado. I mean, it's
sure, but you can argue neither. I mean, give Hurtado one more year. Luis has speed. Luis can get around people, but I don't think his touch.
I want him to have the ball when he does that, though.
Right. his touch after he gets the ball and run past somebody has not improved in 3 years.
He has stuff you can't teach in Porter's. Like, I can afford to have somebody like him on my team if he grows, and if he doesn't grow, sure, at a certain point you're going to cut ties with him.
His play in MLS Cup was an anomaly.
He actually passed in the final third. That was
I was like a lot of people. I was completely blinded by his athleticism when he first came to the crew. And I remember that goal he scored against Cincinnati down in Nippert, where it was just a corker, and you get you get sort of lost in Luis Diaz fantasy land. But then, you know, last season I was just, maybe it was where I was sitting. I was sitting in the south end, pretty low down, and he seemed to be running at right at me a lot last season. And I just started to kind of go, you know, I feel like I'm just seeing the same thing over and over again.
Brian, you need to move behind the goal. You need to move directly there behind the goal. And it's like Forrest Gump holding Mark up the sign it. For him.
Yeah, there you go. Well, we'll see. You know, I'm not ready to give up hope because certainly the talent, the gifts are there. He just needs to bring it all home somehow. I don't know. But, you know, that's a question we can answer at a later date. I feel like, you know, the season always at this point, more mysteries to solve than anything else. One of the mysteries to me is our opponent on Saturday. I wish we were playing somebody we were familiar with, because I feel like I haven't seen Vancouver in like 10 years. I have no idea what's going on. Sebastian Berhalter was dealt there. I do know that. Is he going to play?
First looking into the move, like you said, Vancouver is not a team that we see all the time, so we can't really, I'm not prepared to do a full analysis of the team by any means, but looking into just their personnel last year and bringing in Sebastian Berhalter, I don't see him starting. I don't see him starting at all. I think he's going to be kind of a bench guy like he was in Columbus. Maybe he'll be the next man up, but they have a pretty solid group of midfield. I mean, they were a playoff team last year. They have a solid group of midfielders that unless Berhalter, I mean, he's had 2 weeks to crack through. I don't know if that's going to be the case with him. I don't think we'll see him at all unless it's substitute appearance or something like that. But they're a playoff team. You can't take that away from them.
And they're getting Godoy back after a long injury, the 28-year-old Argentinian, which will certainly help them in the back as well. I mean, I got to be honest with you. I don't know if anybody can give some light on Vancouver Whitecaps, but I'm not the guy. They just feel like a big – I just never see them, you know? So I'm more interested in what 11 we put on the field at 3:30 on Saturday. Thomas, how do you see us lining up against them? Will it look a lot like that last game, the Carolina Challenges? You already intimated it probably would.
I think that you'll see the same lineup. Maybe Milos in place of Josh. We'll talk tomorrow. Caleb has press conference, so we'll see how Josh is doing. We'll see if there is any lingering injury or if it was like precautionary. We'll just take him out to be sure. And also, I think it's a crapshoot between Barry and Zardes, because that's what it sounds like. It's going to be week to week. He started Barry in the last match.
Interesting.
Yeah. In the two matches though, in the two matches Barry's played, he played a little bit in the second one. Also, he played good defense. I think he's watching Zardes a lot. He's a very good defensive forward. Also, he's trying to play on both sides of the ball. I would pick maybe Zardes from that 11. I would put Zardes in Barry's place. It's the only thing I would see different. Etienne, I think Etienne did really well in the Carolina Challenge Cup. I could see him starting again. But Artur Nagby in the midfield, that and Yeboah and Lucas, that all makes sense. The fullbacks aren't going to change, and you know Ayla Room's going to be in the back. So switch out Barry for Zardes and Milos for Josh, and I think that's the starting lineup on Saturday.
Seems pretty simple. I tell you what, though, that – Miguel Barry is just becoming sort of a cult figure for me, because when he gets Bart, when he gets loose and starts running, I go, damn, that guy is so big, but he can run. You know, I'm doing the Diaz thing again, where I'm getting so enamored with the athleticism that I've got my blinders on, but
it's also, I think, you know, the awareness, right? He times his run so well. He finds an open space. I mean, the way he's able to, you know, receive the ball and get a good turn in. I mean, those are, I think, those where Luis Diaz, you know, Lucho's got more, you know, God-given abilities probably. I mean, certainly, you know, faster and acceleration. I mean, Barry's just he's almost a bit of a cerebral player. And I think I don't want to, you know, take what I was saying earlier about, you know, tempering our expectations with Miguel Berry to say that I don't think that he's a MLS caliber, you know, striker. I don't know that he's necessarily an all-star, but I think he's going to get every opportunity. He's not young per se for an MLS player. I mean, he's what, 24 right now. That's honestly, I think, you know, your prime, to be honest, for most soccer players. So he's going to get the opportunities. I think he's, you know, to be learning from a guy like Jossie Zardes, especially what you alluded to there, Brian, that defensive portion of the portion of it. And I would, you know, love a situation where Miguel Berry, you know, kind of plays his way to starting, and Jossie Zardes is a guy that you can bring off, that you can bring on for some change of pace. That would be a luxury to have for this team. But I think Miguel Berry, I could see him, you know, putting in 8 goals if he's not, you know, your starter.
5 against Cincinnati, right?
Yeah. We're just not playing as much Cincinnati this year, or that number would be going up.
That's, you know, if for no other reason, just him being the Cincinnati killer will be forever legend.
Yeah, absolutely. Put him in the Ring of Honor. Now, whether he starts, that's to be questioned, but he's a Ring of Honor player, no doubt.
That 2-goal performance to,
oh God,
he's to just win just that game, them. I'll never forget that. That was, you know, as a big a drag as a lot of last season was, that was just such a fun night, and most of that game was a drag. Just the end that was good.
The game in Cincy earlier when he comes off and it's like, who the hell is this guy? Oh my God, I love him.
That was so funny. Just, you know, Cincinnati, they were just feeling their oats in the game up here. They were just, you know, and I just kept looking up at him going, I don't know that this is going to work out for you guys, but we'll see. You're awfully loud right now. Oh, man.
Hey, Ralph, weren't you down in Cincinnati for that game?
For the one that was
There's Ralph. Hi, Ralph.
Hi. No, I was not, actually. I wasn't.
The one where they brought the tie?
The only one I went to was CQLD National Championship game, or not National Championship game, sorry, sports are colliding there for a second. The national team game against Mexico.
Gotcha.
Well, Ralph, I was getting ready to segue into the 2022 kit reveal the other day. You got any comments on that?
Well, first off, I want to ask, what are we mad about?
I'm not mad. I'm not, you know, I'm so, I'm just not tired mad at being anything, mad yeah. about stuff I have no control over.
We're
so,
actually kind you know, of being Sunshine Brigade-ish right now.
Oh, yeah. we're being Sunshine Brigade right now? Okay.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. It's all good.
Where have we joined this conversation?
Are you going to buy a new jersey?
Already did.
Oh, okay. All right.
100%.
Was it a Cincinnati one or was it a Columbus one?
Okay. So here's the deal, boys. The Cincinnati one, I like what Adidas has done with pretty much all of the kits. I think I haven't seen one that I haven't liked this year.
They had a good year. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I like the small details. And I know, Thomas, you can relate to this, especially with NWSL coverage and the great ones that Nike has put out in the last year or two. But I feel like Adidas is finally kind of getting the hit that basic templates aren't going to cut it. And we're kind of thankfully past that time where, you know, the plain black and white shirts are, thankfully, I don't think going to be much of a thing anymore. They really did a nice job with the minute details. That being said, I found it a little bit comical that the premium jersey with the players wear on the field is going to be $140 list price. I did a little bit of research on Saturday going to the shop. It's $140. They have the standard kit that they call the kind of watered down version of it. It's $100. And if you want to spend anything less than that, good luck. You're buying a t-shirt for $35 or something like that. But
there you go. I'm buying a t-shirt.
I actually bought one for a friend because I have a friend who lives up in Northeast Ohio, and I was at the event. I was at the jersey reveal, the supporters version, not the Columbus famous people version. And I bought one of the kits for him because they're like, oh, I'll pay you back. So I go into the shop with an authentic kit with personalization, $193.50.
And that's
when I paid for that, I was like, I'm glad it's you paying for it, not me, because that is a price.
Reminds me of like when the NHL came back from the lockout and they switched jersey outfitters to Reebok from CCM, and the new jerseys that came out were cut a little different and typed a little, you know, just a little bit of a different cutter across the chest and stuff. And I think right out the gate, the sticker price was $220, and that's not economical to any fans at all or anything like that. But, you know,
yeah, people are continuing to buy them every day. You walk into that blue line and it's people are buying jerseys, like multiple jerseys. And that's
the funny part. I asked one of the people on Saturday when I was down at the shop, I said, how are sales going? And they said, it's better than opening day at lower.com field. Like, it's stuff's flying off.
Well, yeah, I don't think they had any jerseys available for sale on opening day.
Well, that aside though, I mean, they were saying total sales of merchandise and things like that. You know, and then it's, you know, pretty good for a logo that nobody likes. And, you know, that's a story that, you know, I learned about on Twitter. You know, I made the comment about the logo, and you'd have thought I murdered somebody with all the things that I was getting on Twitter and stuff, which I got a good laugh out of some of those, but there was constructive conversations on that end. But y'all need to focus on some other things in life, man. I mean, soccer's starting.
You know, that's Ralph. That's Twitter, man. Yeah. If you
I've learned, did
inkling,
I win?
If you have the inkling of maybe serving yourself up on a platter, that's the place to do it. Well, I mean, people get riled up about just about anything. You know,
I think I won Twitter though on Saturday. I think that's what it felt like.
Congratulations.
I think that's what the kids call getting ratioed. And
you know what? I've decided that with everything going on, I'm just not going to bother to get upset about things that like that are not that big a deal. And I can't change it anyway. And at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter all that much. So I don't, you know, if we want to play shirts and skins, that's fine. I'm sure all these guys look good without shirts on. So that's fine. Whatever works, you know, at this point, it's like, okay. Okay.
I'm going to come to the aid of Ralph here on something unrelated to the crew jersey. I really, really like the FC Cincinnati orange kit. And that has more to
do. Baby.
And that has more to do with me living a decent chunk of my U.S. life in Cincinnati. And if I do buy one, I will hide it in my closet and not tell anybody.
Well, I'm not buying one. I've always liked their color scheme. You know, it's just that the rest of the organization seems pretty lost.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, we could do a whole podcast on them, and maybe we will at some point, because
I have a friend, I have a few friends that are on FC Cincinnati podcast that I went to college with. I can get them on here and harass them.
Okay, well, we'll have to do that down the road. Coming up, we have quite a ways to wait before Hell Is Real hits again, but it's always a good time just to ask Miguel Berry real quick.
Can I get some words in about this jersey too?
Oh yeah, oh, absolutely. I'm trying to protect Ralph, so you know.
Yeah. Hey, Mark.
Well, it's not.
Mark, yes. By the way, I watched the Eagles live stream on Saturday. Fantastic work. Your color commentary guy left a lot to be desired. But you really carried.
Were you the play-by-play guy, Bart?
I am. I'm the play-by-play voice of the Columbus Eagles.
Nice. Well, I know you were involved in that before. Were you always the play-by-play guy?
I've been it for this is going into the second season. We only do the home games. I've traveled enough for, you know, to call games for teams that, I don't need to spend any more time on buses.
That's good to hear that you're back doing it again, another season. Yeah. That's a beautiful thing. Now go ahead on the jersey, because we got to wrap this thing up pretty soon.
Well, I'll say one, if you want a great
jersey that was introduced this year, the Columbus Eagles jersey, is terrific. And a bit of an homage to the original inaugural 96 crew jersey. If you want a great yellow crew jersey, I really recommend the GCG Bag Icons kit at Supporter Supply Co.
There we go.
But I, with regard to the jersey, I think first of all, I don't really agree that Adidas is moving on and you know has really learned anything about these. I mean, you look at the new jerseys this year that have been getting some fanfare, like the Montreal one, for instance, which is literally the exact same one that they did for Arsenal 2 years ago, or like the Orlando one, which is the four Columbus kit. I mean, there's the Toronto community one, which was just basically like, hey,
that's a 45% gray.
Yeah, our printer ran out of ink, so we're just doing this one.
Have you been to Toronto?
Oh, yes, I have been to Toronto. When I think of the six, yeah, I'm just like, yes, this is our community, the most diverse international city in North America, and it's white and gray, baby.
Hold on. Have you ever gotten like a whole bunch of different colored Play-Dohs? And then you mix them together and you keep mixing them together. You know what happens? They turn into gray.
Yep.
You know what I saw that I liked was which team in the Carolina Challenge had really tiny numbers in the back of their jersey?
Charles, that was the Charles Miami training kit. I think those were training kits.
I'm being facetious, but I thought, I felt sorry for my good friend Neil Sika because. Yeah. You know, it's like, what number is that? What are they doing with that? You know, let's hope we don't have the Adidas tiny number kit.
The maybe dark gray on gray numbers for the practice kits. Who thought that was a good idea?
Well, who is it? One of the team, don't they have like a murdered out black kit with black numbers on the back? Like, okay, that looks fun, but seriously, you cannot see anything.
Yeah.
But I mean, with regards to the jersey, you know, the good thing is obviously that it's yellow. They listened. Otherwise, it basically looks like a template kit that, you know, somebody found. There's a little string on it that was loose and they pulled it and the string just kind of zigzagged around all around it. And then, okay, yeah, we've got a pattern on it now too. I think the pattern's a bit of a cop out. I think it's, you know, fine if you just want a plain yellow jersey. And I think what I am a little bit excited about is if they're actually going to mix and match with shorts and socks, I think that'd be a nice feature. I'm all for it. I think, you know, banana kits are great. And I think especially in games where you can, like, you know, needle teams like Nashville, absolutely do the banana kit. But I'm fine with doing, you know, black shorts from time to time. I'm fine with throwing black shorts and yellow socks with the gray kit as well. But I think what irritates me the most about this Adidas contract that they improved a bit this year, but I still think they clearly, you know, see this as an MLS and these MLS teams as an afterthought. I mean, you just look at the inability of teams to actually be able to purchase enough jerseys to be able to sell. And then they put these arbitrary standards.
Bart, hold on for a second. I'm not seeing things from fans of other teams saying that they cannot get a hold of their jerseys. Maybe that's who I'm seeing, but I'm not seeing the outrage of fans saying, hey, we can't buy our jerseys. And
maybe you've heard about the supply chain problem.
Yeah. I mean, Cincinnati in their inaugural season, they literally did not have authentic jerseys. The players were playing in replica jerseys. That's Cincinnati. I'm not saying that they're not a garbage franchise, has no idea what to do, and that no one should be held to their standards. But come on. I also refuse to believe that Adidas is like the Adidas that has a contract for all of these MLS teams is the one that is, you know, just completely without fault on this. They're obviously imposing things. Some teams are able to work around it, but
I don't understand why this league still has a contract with Adidas. It was one thing in the 90s when none of these teams could do it. But right now I just see this as a grift where Don Garber can, you know, grease his palms a little bit, but see any benefit for any teams having this league-wide contract anymore. And I think it's getting in the way of getting creative jerseys. Maybe that will change and we'll see something really creative and fun out of Columbus in a couple of years with this guy that they, you know, paid however many hundreds of thousands of dollars out of England to design stuff. What a grift.
How many years are left in this contract with Adidas? Is it 2023 or 2025?
That I'm not sure.
I want to say it's pretty close. It might be 2025, but I don't see.
Yeah, you know what? Other contract is up in 2025. If I could just segue away from talking about jerseys, because I don't know, we have no control over this. Thomas Neymar, his deal is up with PSG in 2025, and he says he wants to finish his run in MLS. Where's he going?
I think you should roll right into Columbus. There's plenty of snow in February. I think you'll love it here. The one thing I'm sick of players saying before I retire. If you think about it, every move is before you retire, right? It doesn't help the league. I think we've heard all the rumors about Messi wants to come here, Ronaldo wants to come here. Well, Ronaldo can't come to the States, but other players want to come here. Allowed to come to the States.
No, we can't.
Other players, like, we always see the rumors. I think it appeases maybe a U.S. supporters, like, oh, Neymar might come here, and it gets people excited. I think you're talking about Don. I don't think Don hates the coverage. You're talking about being ratioed, Ralph. I mean, that's still engagement, right? Engagement's engagement. So
hate reads equal the same, my friend.
Hey, you can still spin the numbers however you want in that boardroom, right? But yeah, I don't think too much about the Neymar thing.
All right, fair enough. One thing real quick, though. Did we talk about the sportsbook sponsorship? Because that sweet, sweet sportsbook money might get Neymar into Columbus.
Tipico or whatever, yeah.
Yeah,
Tipico,
you know, at least I'm glad you right. brought that up, because I was not aware of them. And just in case you're not aware, I think before the end of the year, we're going to have legal sports betting here in Ohio. Otherwise, I don't know
why they would have done the deal.
January 2023. Okay. So that's a game changer, and I guess that obviously they're going to be involved. Do they put a sports book in lower.com, Ralph?
I don't know, but a funny thing, as I took a deep dive, as I'm sure many other Crew fans had too, is that Tipico is owned by USA Today, which I found very fascinating, especially kind of to diversify their portfolio. As we all know, print media is not really
– let's fire some more Dispatch writers so we can own a, you know,
Sports Illustrated. I had a pop-up ad on something the other day. Sports Illustrated has a sports book now.
So, it's going to be massive, especially with the way that these companies like FanDuel and I was researching a couple other ones, DraftKings, they actually kind of look out for you and try to ward off any kind of gambling issues, because if you try to do too much, they'll tell you, hey, we're locking you out, bud. And by the way, here's the number for a therapist if you want. But
it's like the bartender at 2 a.m.
You know, exactly. I still like the excitement of owing organized crime money and trying to keep one step ahead of them. I'm going to miss
bookies are really the ones hurting in all of this. What are bookies going to do now?
Your mom and pop bookie, okay?
I believe they're also changing the name of the Rail Club to the Tipico Club.
That's correct.
Is that correct? Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I read that email again today.
And the unexpected sleep sponsorship.
Mm-hmm. I'm all for it. If it's money for the club, I know it's a vice for some, but obviously gamble responsibly and, you know, consume your alcoholic beverages responsibly. But if it brings money to the club and contributes to sustainability, I think that's a beautiful thing.
We won when we had Scott's. I think we should. What happened when we had Scott's MLS Cup? I don't know. Bring it back.
I thought it's a different world to pick winners. That's what I've learned.
You look at
I always pick winners.
You know, after like the top six or seven clubs in EPL, all the bottom feeders are sponsored by sports books. This is an old thing in England. You know, I've been to Dublin, Ireland. They have a Ladbroke, which is a great name. Ladbrokes Sportsbook on every corner. They're like 7-Elevens. So, you know, I mean, it is what it is. You know, I just finished watching The Sopranos after all these years. And, you know, the way they did things was pretty unsavory. So, you know, people aren't going to get their legs broken. So that's a good thing.
Do you think Tony died in the diner, though?
I think he was already dead and they were in heaven. How about that?
Oh, it's good.
And then Tony wakes up at the end of the series and it was all a dream.
Yes. All right. Well, we got to wrap this up. I wanted to talk about Crew too, but you know, they're not going to start playing Thomas until May, right?
End of March is the idea now.
But oh, okay.
Right now the MLS Next Pro League, it's the old saying that they're building the plane while it's in the air. That's what it kind of feels like right now, where they're still doing a lot of, yeah.
Will they be selling tickets to this? Will it be free houses?
I doubt it's going to be free, but they are going to have matches.
Yeah, I think they're going to draw a lot from how the Reserve League used to go, which they didn't have tickets. I think it's also going to depend on where they're playing, which I think
Will they sell beer and, you know, brats?
I mean, if they're smart, they're going to do. They should. I
would like to go. You know.
What we do know is that we will have dedicated coverage of Crew 2 by Massive Report's own Derek Smith.
Or very good.
As some terrific people know him plug. As Brother T-Bone.
Terrific plug.
Very good. Well, we look forward to that. We'll get to that another time. All right, let's do our picks for the Vancouver game that we're going to get out of here. Ralph, I'll start with you since you're big on my screen right now.
Oh, you're the, I'm sorry.
You, and you I've got have the, blur the big filter window
on right now. Yeah. man, it's a new season. It's going to be bone chilling. As we know, Canadians are really good in the cold.
Play in a dome.
I don't know how Ghanaians handle the cold or Spaniards like Miguel Berry or anybody like that. No, I'm teasing. You know, it's first game of the season. You don't really know what to expect. You try some new lineups. You see some things. I'm going to go with the 1-1 tie. The draw.
1-1 tie. Well, that's a buzzkill. All right, Bart, I'm going to save you for last. Sam?
I think Ralph was going the same direction I was going. I feel that the first 3-4 maybe even 5 games of the season are going to be to gel together, and I don't think we really see them kind of hit any semblance of who they might be until after those first 5 games. So I am going to go with everybody's going to be playing timid. Vancouver doesn't want to lose on the road. Columbus doesn't want to lose at home. I will go with a 1-1 draw.
Phew, man. Okay. Thomas,
I get to follow those really exciting picks there. I'm going to go with I think there is a little bit of gelling. I think the Crew are going to win 2-1. Playing at home is nice. Vancouver coming out east is also nice for us. Playing for them a 12:30 game local time out west. I think the Crew will do well. I don't think there's as much gelling as we think might be needed. I think you still have a lot of players outside of, like I said, Dejanek and Yeboah. I think they're pros though, and they're going to be able to fit into the team well. I give it 2-1, and I'll go crazy. Luis Diaz scores a goal. The year of Luis Diaz. This is going to be the year, everybody.
I like it. I like
and that
it.
Will well, be his only goal of the year.
Oh, bah, bah, bah.
I'm going to go 2-0. I believe in our recommitment to defending, and I don't think we're going to give up anything, especially in that cold weather. You guys forget that Vancouver plays in a part of Canada where it's like Seattle. It's not particularly cold for the most part, and they play in a dome. So, you know, being out in the frigid 33-degree weather, I think will affect them more, especially on the road. I like Yeboah to score a goal, his first for the Columbus Crew. And what the hell? Josh Williams comes off the bench and scores on a corner, Bart Logan. Can you top that?
I mean, you literally took two of my three goals. I've got Crew winning 3-0. We'll throw Miguel Berry in with one of those goals too. And I think Yeboah is going to score one akin to that just ridiculous one he Gordon Pullin that ESPN was tweeting about and not realizing that, oh, by the way, this guy is now with a team that plays for a league that we broadcast games for. It was also in the hype video that the crew put out when they signed him. I mean, it is stupid. Fakes a shot, makes about seven defenders miss in the box, and then puts it in.
Is it like Mo Salah's goal from this last weekend?
Better. Yeah, Yeboah. That's it.
Fair enough. 3-0. Okay.
Yep. 3-0. Josh Williams bicycle kick. And Miguel Berry.
I knew I could count on you, Bart. Thank you. I leave today's first episode of the Master Report feeling good about the 2022 season. We thank you for listening. Like and subscribe, please. We do appreciate that. We thank so much Saucy Brew Works. We will be there in Harrison West soon. Third in Michigan, if you want to get a head start. If you want to get a table first, get yourself a delicious pint. They have so many different offerings there. And I look forward to staring at the menu while the server encourages me to make a decision. It's not easy. It's not easy. So
they have coffee Saucy
Brew Works, thank you for being back.
They have coffee, too.
Oh, and the coffee, too. Yes, and
we sit on the coffee side. So if you want to come and hang out.
I know. But
get some pizza.
You can have
get
the beer on the coffee side. Coffee.
Yeah.
It's all good. All right, fellas, thank you so much. Here's to a great season ahead. And we thank you so much for listening to the Massive Report. And we'll talk to you next week.